Hello, this is Danielle Fisher. Welcome to Melanoma Insights for Professionals, brought to you by Melanoma Institute Australia. In today's podcast, we're delving into an exciting area of research that will undoubtedly transform the way melanoma is treated in the near future. Neoadjuvant therapy is an innovative approach that involves giving drug therapy before the melanoma is surgically removed. This treatment modality is creating a buzz among clinicians and researchers globally as the potential benefits for melanoma patients are being realised. With MIA as the leader in this area of research, I'm delighted to be sharing the studio today with some of the world's foremost authorities in the field of neoadjuvant therapy in melanoma. Together with our colleagues in the US and Europe, MIA formed the International Neoadjuvant Melanoma Consortium, a multidisciplinary international collaboration that brings together key stakeholders with the goal of creating an organised approach into the investigation of neoadjuvant treatment in melanoma. Leading our discussion today is Professor Georgina Long. Georgina is a medical oncologist at MIA and Royal North Shore Hospital and is chair of Melanoma Medical Oncology and Translational Research at the University of Sydney. Joining us today is Professor Richard Scollier. Richard is a senior staff specialist in tissue pathology and diagnostic oncology at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital and conjoint professor for the Faculty of Medicine and Health at the University of Sydney. We also have Associate Professor Alexander Vanacoy in the studio. Alex is the Associate Professor of Melanoma Surgical Oncology at MIA, the University of Sydney and Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. And we'd also like to welcome Associate Professor Alex Menzies. Alex is a medical oncologist and Associate Professor of Melanoma Medical Oncology at MIA, the University of Sydney and Royal North Shore and Mater Hospitals. Welcome to you all and thank you for being here today to share with our listeners how neoadjuvant immunotherapy is paving the way for the next paradigm shift in how we treat patients with melanoma. Let's dive right in then. There's new research showing tremendous potential for improving patient outcomes using neoadjuvant therapy. Georgina, could you explain in more detail what is neoadjuvant therapy, how it's been used in other cancers, and why you believe it holds such promise for the future of melanoma treatment?
Well, thanks, Danielle. That's a really good place to start on this podcast discussing neoadjuvant therapy. So first of all, what is neoadjuvant therapy? Neoadjuvant therapy is a drug therapy that's given to resectable cancer. So cancer that we can cut out everything we can see. Usually we do a scan first and we know where we need to remove all the cancer. So it's drug therapy given before complete resection of all cancer. And historically, this has been used in cancers that are in really tricky spots or where we really want to preserve the organ or anatomical structure. For example, if you have a cancer in your food pipe or your esophagus, we would like to try and minimize the morbidity of having a cancer in your esophagus, so giving drug therapy so we can decrease the amount of surgery that's needed and keep the anatomical function of the esophagus. Similarly, breast conservation, neoadjuvant therapy is about initially, historically, breast conservation so that we don't need to do mastectomies. So that's what neoadjuvant therapy, it's drug before complete resection of cancer, as opposed to adjuvant therapy, which is given after complete resection of cancer with the aim to mop up any micrometastatic disease and to prevent advanced cancer from recurring. So that explains where it is historically. But what about melanoma? Melanoma, what we're very excited about is neoadjuvant immunotherapy. It's actually not about anatomical preservation, although it may be helpful, and we'll hear from our surgeon regarding that issue. It is about improving survival for patients with melanoma who have a very, historically, very poor outcome. So we're talking about resectable stage three today, where we know overall, for all the substages, about 50% of those patients will recur after complete resection and die from their melanoma. We know drug therapies or adjuvant therapy given after surgery have improved those numbers significantly. But now we have shown that giving it before surgery, particularly immunotherapy, we can improve outcomes and survival even further. The same drug, just given before surgery. Why is that? That is because we think we are training the immune system in a very much more specific and effective way by giving drug while you have cancer or melanoma on board. So that's the rationale, and we're going to speak about the neoadjuvant immunotherapy today. Patients love it. We'll touch on that and why they love it, much more so than adjuvant therapy, as in drug afterwards. And we also love it, and the health mix of it make a lot of sense because we can tailor follow-up after we have neoadjuvant therapy and look at the pathological response. And we're going to hear from pathology, Richard Scollier, regarding that. From surgery, we've got Alex Vanikoy, and from medical oncology, Alex Menzies. So we're all here together. I'm going to throw it open to all three of you. We have a multidisciplinary team here in our studio. So let's start by highlighting, what do you think the benefits are from your perspective of neoadjuvant immunotherapy in melanoma over the current forms of treatment? So maybe we'll start with you, Alex.
Yeah, so there's several factors from a clinical medical oncology position. First of all, there's early data to show that immunotherapy works better given neoadjuvantly, preoperatively, than adjuvant therapy, so a greater increase in cure if given preoperatively. Secondly, we give the drug and can tell if it works. They have drug therapy for 6 weeks, then surgery. We know if it worked in that individual patient, and we know the outlook for that patient is far more precise based on that 6 week preoperative phase. So I think they're the two most important things from my perspective that I think are important. The drugs work better, and we can tailor the outlook for patients based on their individual response.
And we're all very excited about the data that's come out, but do you just want to touch on a few key clinical trials for our audience, particularly the SWOG trial, but the other trials that really show that the benefit is improved?
Yeah, so at present, probably the best head-to-head trial of neoadjuvant versus adjuvant therapy to date is the SWOG trial you mentioned. This involved neoadjuvant pembrolizumab, so single-agent PD-1 therapy given for three doses, then surgery and some adjuvant therapy after that versus an upfront operation and adjuvant therapy. This study showed that there was an improvement in recurrence-free survival, so an improvement in cure, you could argue, in patients that had the neoadjuvant approach in a direct head-to-head.
Nearly 50%, actually. Nearly just shy of 50% improvement in recurrence event-free survival.
So a direct head-to-head study. And that was even with the study, perhaps not with the best combo of drugs and perhaps not with the ability to change therapy up later on for those that perhaps didn't respond so well.
Just delve into that a little bit, because that again highlights the benefit of neoadjuvant. So you give your neoadjuvant, you get your pathological response, and then...
So if you have a good response, most of these people we think probably don't need any further therapy, and some of our early clinical trials have demonstrated that if you respond well to therapy, you have excellent recurrence-free survival, so excellent chance of cure thereafter.
So less than 5% would recur.
And probably don't need any further drug therapy. In contrast, those that don't appear to respond to therapy, these are at high risk. These patients do have a very high risk of recurrence, and we now have opportunities to change drug therapy at that point to give them a second crack at an effective drug that may prevent recurrence.
Okay, so really good point. So we're now going to throw to Alex Vanikoy regarding the surgical perspective in terms of the overall benefits of this approach.
Yeah, so you started off talking about what is the rationale and history behind it. And just to set the stage, for macroscopic stage 3 melanoma, we're talking about macroscopically involved lymph nodes. And the standard of care at the moment is what we call a therapeutic lymph node dissection. That means removal of all lymph nodes to the groin or the axilla or that region of the neck. And that's quite a significant surgery that we know has significant morbidity in the long term, especially things like lymphedema are particularly worrisome for those patients. So for me, the promise of neoadjuvant immunotherapy is that we might be able to tailor that surgery similarly to what you've said before for breast cancer or, for instance, colorectal cancer, being able to be organ preservative.
Okay, that sounds fabulous for patients to experience a lesser surgery, less morbidity due to surgery. And Richard, your highlights about the benefits of neoadjuvant immunotherapy as a pathologist.
Thanks, Georgina. Terrific to talk to you guys about this exciting field. And I guess it really highlights the importance of multidisciplinary care, particularly in the area of neoadjuvant therapy as we've moved this field forward in melanoma. From my perspective, it's all about benefiting the patient. But I think there is an important opportunity for us. Over the last decade, we've had vast improvements in outcomes for patients with advanced stage disease. And many of these patients are now being cured who would previously have been succumbing to their disease. But unfortunately, we're not curing everyone. We've still got work to do. There are a group of patients who don't respond to our best available therapies. And with this neoadjuvant platform, it gives us a great opportunity to look very carefully at those patients who are not responding to therapy to work out why they're not, but also to try and identify what is the best treatment option for them. So I think that's a great part about neoadjuvant.
And you're key in that as a pathologist. I mean, Alex Menzies and Alex Vanacoy both highlighted how in each of their craft group specialties, knowing that pathological response can change their management. For Alex, it's about the non-responders changing their drug therapy. For Alex Vanacoy, it's about the great responders changing their surgery. And then you've highlighted the tissue that gets collected, because those who don't respond obviously will go on to have that full therapeutic lymph node dissection. All that tissue can then go into finding out what we can do best for those who don't respond if we don't have other available treatments. So I'm now going to delve into each of your specialties. So Richard, we'll start with you. As I highlighted, the role of the pathologist is absolutely fundamental for all of us to decide the next steps for patient management. And you are the one that determines the accurate risk profile, so that we can then come up with the best treatment plan. Tell us about how pathological assessment is impacted by neoadjuvant therapy.
The critical goal of pathological assessment of neoadjuvant treated specimens is to work out what the pathological response is. So how we do that is to identify the tumour bed, where the tumour was at the start, and work out the percentage of the tumour bed that contains viable tumour. And to be able to do that accurately, you need to assess the specimen in a systematic manner. We've devised a scheme that is now used around the world for the assessment of pathological response in neoadjuvant specimens. The critical point is that this process is different to how lymph node dissection specimens are normally looked at. Normally, we're trying to avoid areas that don't contain tumour or have necrotic tumour, because it doesn't tell us too much about what the tumour is and the important variables that influence care. But in this setting, it's completely different. So the specimens need to get assessed in a systematic manner. In fact, it's quite labour-intensive to do this, but it's done because of the benefit for the patient and the improvements in outcome that we're now seeing in the various trials that have been conducted.
And with that, there is actually an educational video on the melanoma education portal that speaks to this, the critical role of standardized pathological assessment in neoadjuvant therapy for melanoma. It's a guide for pathologists.
That's it, that Rob Rawson and I put together with the help of Danielle, and we think it's an important need for the pathology community to get up to speed in this change in practice. And this is an instructional video that goes through the International Neoadjuvant Melanoma Consortium guidelines for the assessment of pathological response.
Okay, thanks. So that's done in the path lab. Very critical for us to know the accurate pathological response. So I'm now going to turn to Alex Vanacoy, who will talk about the surgical management and how neoadjuvant therapy is becoming still only clinical trials. And we encourage people to always consider a clinical trial for neoadjuvant therapy. It is not approved in Australia or around the world yet as a standard therapy. It will soon become a standard therapy. There is no doubt about that, given the results we're seeing in the recent randomized trials and the ongoing phase 3 trial, Nadina, of combination immunotherapy versus adjuvant standard treatment. But it will become a mainstay of treatment. So how will this impact surgical decision-making and outcomes for patients?
Yeah, so the first neoadjuvant studies all still mandated that full therapeutic lymph node dissection. And then when we saw the high rate of pathologic responders, and especially those with what we call a major pathologic response, so a complete response or a near complete response with a maximum of 10% of viable tumor cells in the tumor bed, as Richard explained before, we've seen that those patients have excellent outcomes in the long term, with very few of them relapsing. So the question is, do they still need to have that full surgery, or could we tailor that surgery to reduce the morbidity and improve their quality of life in the long run?
Just on that point, I think it's a really good place to highlight that in Australia, and these are the studies that Melanoma Institute Australia has done with the Netherlands Cancer Institute, very important foundational studies, 70 to 75% of patients have a major pathological response, and those patients, less than 5%, will recur. We're taking a population who have a 50% or higher risk of recurrence down to less than 5%, and it's the majority of patients. So
it's really amazing.
Yes, it's incredible. So back to the major pathological responders, sorry, to just get those figures out there for the audience.
Yeah, no, that's really important. And with that, we've developed a proof of concept study, the PRADO study, where rather than doing a therapeutic lymph node dissection in all cases, we've marked the index node. So this is the largest metastatic lymph node metastasis prior to the neoadjuvant therapy. And then at the surgery, we first resected only that index lymph node and then asked Richard and his colleagues to look at the response in that node. And then downstream from that, we've tailored the surgery for those patients and also the further systemic therapy I'm sure Alex Menzies will talk about later. So for the surgery, for those major pathologic responders, we said, well, we'll not continue to do any further surgery on these cases anymore. So no more therapeutic lymph node dissection.
So they just get the index node removed.
Yeah, it's more or less like a sentinel node procedure after neoadjuvant therapy.
And on a larger node, of course, because they're all macroscopic disease.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. And what we saw is that, obviously, those patients had far less surgical morbidity, far less rates of lymphedema, and also reported a better quality of life.
So that's from the PRADO study, P-R-A-D-O, and that was a really fabulous collaboration with MIA and NKR, Netherlands and Australia. And the great thing is measuring that quality of life to pick up the impact on patients, less lymphedema, higher social functioning, back to work sooner, less complications. So a whole host of, yes, Richard, great things.
One thing when I was speaking earlier, I didn't highlight what we mean by a major pathological response. And the summary of that is it means that 10% or less of the tumour is viable within the specimen.
Do you want to just quickly highlight the four categories we use? Because our audience may come across these increasingly, not just in melanoma actually, but across the whole field of cancer and neoadjuvant immunotherapy.
So we assess the percentage of the tumour bed that contains viable tumour, and based on that percentage, put the patient into one of four categories. The category called complete pathological response is, as you might expect, 100% of the tumour has gone, so there's 0% viable tumour. If there's between 0 and 10% viable tumour, it's called a near complete pathological response. If it's 10 to 50% viable tumour, a partial response. And if there's less than 50% of the tumour has responded, then a non-responding patient.
Okay, thanks, Richard. So any other points you wanted to highlight of the surgical management? It's interesting that that whole PRADO concept, which we'd like to take forward, is we're still doing therapeutic lymph node dissections. For example, the SWOG study Alex mentioned. So there's still some unfinished business in terms of the trials. There's, if you've had a major pathological response, should you get drug therapy, really? Because PRADO and some of our earlier trials, we didn't give adjuvant drug therapy. We've got the lesser surgery. What do you think the next steps are to get that into clinical practice?
Yeah, thanks, Regina. That's a big question. So from the PRADO experience, it's a proof of concept. So we think that it's safe based on the PRADO experience, where we see very few local recurrences in the nodal basin where just that index lymph node was resected. And those recurrences are manageable with a surgery at a later time point. So we really need a bigger study, and we're at the moment in the process of developing a protocol for that study to verify the PRADO experience and make that the new standard of care moving forward for these MPR patients.
Okay, another fantastic study. So with that, I'm now going to move to Alex Menzies to talk about the medical oncology part of it. But it might be best, Alex, if we demonstrate all of the medical oncology, which actually multidisciplinary, surgery and pathology with some cases. Why don't we do two extremes, the great responders and not great responders, and how they managed in the clinic?
Yeah, so look, what I might do is I might take one patient that I saw a few months ago and put a few, I guess, hypothetical scenarios and see how we think. So I saw a patient that was 42 years old, a young man, no previous history of any melanoma very well, that presented with an axillary mass to his GP, had a biopsy, it confirmed melanoma, and was sent to one of our surgeons, had a scan, a PET scan, and an MRI scan that was clear. So had bulky stage 3 melanoma in the axilla.
Unknown primary, Alex?
Unknown primary, that's right. So this happens in about, what,
10%
up to 10% of patients have an unknown primary. This is not uncommon.
And we do know when we have these lymph nodes that these are similar to cutaneous. They have the same profile molecularly. They are cutaneous melanoma, basically.
And probably from a regressed primary tumour that goes undetected.
And this patient had BRAF mutant melanoma. So had a BRAF mutant melanoma with axillary nodes. So came to one of our surgeons at MIA, knows about our neoadjuvant trials. And just to stress again, at the moment, the only way you should be ever giving neoadjuvant therapy is in a trial. It is not approved or used outside of a clinical trial. So this patient saw the surgeon, came and saw me. We had a neoadjuvant immunotherapy trial open and the patient received two doses of ipilimumab and nivolumab.
Just to highlight, we always have neoadjuvant trials open. We usually have about four that on and off have slots. There is always a neoadjuvant option on clinical trials. Why? Because we've got so much more work to do in this space. And also the resistance question that Richard brought up, it's a beautiful way to really accelerate drug development for all those people who don't respond.
So I think this is where I might diverge the cases a bit in the outcomes. In the first case, I'll take the negative view that this patient had 6 weeks worth of drug therapy, and at the 6 week time point, he came back to see me to clinic and it felt that the mass was a little bit larger. And he'd had a PET scan at the time that quite surprisingly revealed a few small new lung metastases that looked real. They were FDG avid. We paused the surgery, arranged for a lung biopsy, and it confirmed progressive melanoma.
So I'm just going to flick this quickly to Alex Vanikoy. Alex, your colleagues around the world would say, oh, neoadjuvant therapy, they're going to progress. I could have got that out 6 weeks ago. What's your response to that?
Yeah, absolutely. The surgery would be technically possible, but in the end, it would have been futile anyways because these lung nodules would have occurred after the surgery and the restaging before starting adjuvant systemic therapy. And actually, that happens more frequently than it does on neoadjuvant therapy. So if you do the surgery and then restage them, you see progression in about 15% of cases, whereas this progression, as Alex Menzies showed us now, on the neoadjuvant to distant sites is about 5 to 7% of cases only.
So just to highlight that for the audience, if you do surgery up front, we find 15 to 20% have progressed to distant disease when we do a scan after surgery, getting them ready for adjuvant treatment. On neoadjuvant therapy, we only see that 5 to 6% of the time because we're moving everything up front before surgery. We save them a futile operation. So that logic does not really fit with the biology of melanoma. The biology there is it is a systemic disease. The surgery would not have stopped those lung metastases. And importantly, you've actually had a test of drug as well, and this poor fellow, 42-year-old, is not sensitive to drug therapy either, the drug therapy we gave him. So what next, Alex?
Yeah, so for that patient, they then enrolled on a metastatic, an immunotherapy early phase clinical trial and responded well to that trial. We, of course, had BRAF-MEK available as well. But as you quite rightly pointed, and I think it's really important to stress, that is a rare, rare occurrence. We'll take option two for this patient now. So this patient had 6 weeks of drug therapy, had a scan that showed that it looked like the lymph nodes were about the same size. Clinically, all the way through on examination, they felt about the same.
And you've got neoadjuvant immunotherapy. This is all immunotherapy we're talking about today.
The same 6 week run-in
treatment.
Had surgery, and then the pathology report came back from Richard saying that there was no pathological response. There was 70% viable tumour. in the tumour bed. And so this patient, we know now, having had the test of drug, that he's not been deemed to be at with our current cutoffs and our current criteria. We're working to try and refine that better. But it would suggest that he is at higher risk of recurrence and hasn't responded to this treatment as we'd like.
And we know that from our Prado study, our Passanio study, when we look at the curves of the PATH non-responders, which is this fellow you've just described, they have a higher rate of recurrence. But what next?
So what could be done for this patient is a few options. We have the option to continue adjuvant therapy, so continue nivolumab. You might think, well, if they've had 6 weeks of therapy and it didn't look like he responded, what's the point? But some recent data does suggest that there may be potential benefit for a more prolonged duration of therapy in preventing micrometastatic recurrence. But of course, the other option for this man is we can go to another proven active option, which is adjuvant BRAF/MEK inhibitors. So that's a very appealing option for a patient in this setting.
And so in clinic on this trial, Nadina, for example, that's what would happen. He would go on to adjuvant BRAF/MEK. So a beautiful example of how neoadjuvant therapy using our best immunotherapy doublet, not having a response but then being able to give the patient an option for a second crack at cure with BRAF/MEK. You cannot do that in adjuvant therapy, like just without neoadjuvant, because you just don't know whether they're responding or not. So this is brilliant, tailoring the treatment.
And, yep. And this would, of course, then tailor his follow-up. You might see him more frequently than you would do in other situations. You know, information is good, even if it's not necessarily good news. Information is helpful.
My experience with my patients is that they love it, even if it's bad news. So in talking about neoadjuvant therapy, I will play out various different scenarios for them at the get-go and say, look, even if you don't respond, because I do have to prepare that 20% that don't respond for that disappointment. So I say, look, even if you don't respond, it gives us an option to then tailor things, and at least we know. Wouldn't you rather know now than wait a year or two and have all these recurrences?
And that's the key. When we give adjuvant therapy, we give it in the dark. We're in the dark. The patient's in the dark. It's very sort of, you know, in a way, sort of boring panic.
Yes.
We have no knowledge of how they're going to respond on an individual level. And it's, I have to say, as a doctor, it's frustrating. As a patient, it's quite anxiety provoking. So this creates a greater degree of certainty. So now we're going to take the final option, which is the far more likely scenario we see now in clinic every day. This man had 6 weeks worth of therapy. He came into clinic 3 weeks later and said, I can already feel it shrinking. It felt a bit hot. It felt a bit warm for a day or two. I can feel it getting softer. And clearly you could tell that he was having a response even at that early three-week mark.
You're giving me goosebumps talking about it.
By the six-week mark, a yet further clinical response. Radiologically, we'd seen a significant shrinkage of the tumour. Anecdotally, for this trial, it required an early on-treatment biopsy. And on that on-treatment biopsy, we could already see features of fibrosis, not much melanoma in that biopsy, much less than we would have expected. And so he had surgery, had the standard operation, which is a complete lymph node dissection at this point in time, but got the news back that he'd had a near-complete pathological response. We know now that means he has excellent prognosis. He has a very bright outlook. I would argue, and we believe, that with combination immunotherapy, you may not need any adjuvant therapy if you have a good response to treatment. And on this clinical trial, he'll be not having any adjuvant therapy here. And in future, whilst we're still following up patients at the usual regular intervals, I think in future we might be starting to discharge these patients from clinic much earlier because their outlook's so good.
Yeah, so usually we follow up 3 monthly with scans. So in this situation, he's had a great response. At least you do away with the adjuvant component of drugs. So that's less toxicity, financially less stress on the health system and the patient. And in the future, you're saying, we may actually say, hey, you know what, let's do 6 monthly scans now because we know the risk is low, or a couple of 3 months and then go to 6 quite early. We transition to 6 monthly scans much earlier.
I mean, honestly, there may be a scenario when we get more data from the trials that we might not need to do many scans at all in some of these patients, such as the low rate of recurrence. And I guess one thing just to highlight is, unlike in other neoadjuvant therapies with chemotherapy, targeted therapy, where you really need a pathological complete response to be confident for long-term outlook, it appears that maybe any, you know, a near complete response, even a partial response, may be sufficient with immunotherapy to have durable survival.
Particularly if it's the right type of response.
Would you want to just comment on that? What do you see down the microscope with that right type of response?
So what we've learned is, so initially when immunotherapy starts, the immune system's activated and we see lymphocytes getting inside and attacking the tumour cells. And then over time that changes into fibrosis, and that's the real strong predictor of a good response for the patient, indicates that the immunotherapy has worked very well. So particularly the Hyaline type of mature fibrosis, if we see that, that's gold. We know the patients can do really well. Even in some of these people with only partial response, if they've got that fibrosis, that seems to be a really good sign.
And so biologically, why we're so excited about immunotherapy as opposed to things like targeted and chemotherapy, where you can only really judge it on a complete response, is the biology behind immunotherapy. It is about improving survival. It's about training that individual's immune system against that tumour in a very specific way, and having a little bit of tumour on board, like a stage three patient, gives us that opportunity to train it much more effectively than when you have much less tumour on board where it's all resected. And we get that added benefit of being able to feedback prognosis, refine, tailor surgery and drug therapy and follow-up. So I'm going to just check, have we missed anything that any of my multidisciplinary colleagues would like to highlight about neoadjuvant immunotherapy?
For the surgeons, I'd like to highlight 2 points. And one is, we touched on it with Alex's cases, is the radiological response not necessarily corresponds to the pathological response, which means that even if the tumor might seem the same or have grown, you might still have a response. So it's really pivotal to get that tissue for Richard to be able to assess that response.
Yeah, really good point. And sometimes it can swell up because of the immune reaction in the tumor. Before we sum up, Alex, I just want to throw to you neoadjuvant therapy for non-melanoma skin cancer. So we've been talking about melanoma till now. Tell us about that area.
Yeah, so look, melanoma's really led oncology in neoadjuvant immunotherapy, and we're now seeing it in other cancers. In non-melanoma skin cancer, it's particularly important as well. The clinical scenarios might be a little bit different. Often when we're thinking about neoadjuvant therapy for melanoma, we're looking at all these benefits we mentioned before, perhaps not so much about the opportunity for surgical de-escalation. But with, for example, BCC, SCC and Merkel cell cancer, these often rarely can present quite locally advanced, and surgery can be quite morbid in these situations. So whilst we are also seeing from early clinical trials high evidence of activity, improved survival with neoadjuvant therapy, I think there's an even greater opportunity here to perhaps reduce surgical morbidity in that situation.
Okay. So highlighting these other cancers where we're moving forward in the field of neoadjuvant therapy, they have that added benefit over melanoma of actually improving surgical outcomes, decreasing the surgical morbidity for the patients. Thank you for highlighting that. That's very important for our listeners as well. So the key messages that we have discussed today are, number one, neoadjuvant immunotherapy is using the same immunotherapy drugs as adjuvant therapy, but given before surgery, complete resection of the cancer, so before that surgery. There is a much better immune response against the cancer when you give it before surgery. We didn't mention the data about that, but we've got some good scientific evidence that your immune system gets more highly activated. Patients love neoadjuvant therapy. It gives them a much more refined prognosis and tailoring of their treatment. There's more certainty about their future, and they love that, even if they don't do well. It's not necessarily about anatomical preservation in melanoma. It's about improving the survival because of this enhanced immune reaction or response. The pathological features are absolutely critical for a good and bad outcome. We need a good pathological assessment to determine the future for the patient and their management. And as I just highlighted, it really does allow us to tailor the patient's follow-up. So a very exciting area in cancer. As Alex Menzies said, melanoma is leading the way and other cancers will follow suit. And it's a very exciting time to be able to help patients in this way. I'd like to thank you all.
Thanks, Georgina.
Thank you, Georgina.
Just a note to our listeners, the clinical trials that are being conducted at Melanoma Institute Australia are available on the Melanoma Institute Australia website with the eligibility criteria and contacts. Also, I'd like to note that this podcast is accurate as of February 2023.
Thank you all for that enlightening discussion. You have been listening to Melanoma Insights for Professionals, brought to you by Melanoma Institute Australia and made possible by unrestricted educational grants from Merck Sharp & Dohme Pharmaceuticals, Bristol Myers Squibb and Heine. I'd also like to acknowledge that this recording was done on Cammeraygal land. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please share it with a friend or colleague and be sure to leave us a review. For more practice-changing education, sign up to our Melanoma Education portal at melanomaeducation.org.au. Thanks for listening.